Welcome to Motor Quad, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 517 for Wednesday, the 7th of December, 2016. A bit of a longer hiatus than we first expected, but turns out that Motorcycle Live is a bit tough. But my name is Harry Lloyd. I have managed to recover from Motorcycle Live. We'll touch on that in just a little second. And joining me once again is Dave Neal. Dave, how are you going?
I'm good. And glad to have you back after your little hiatus to Motorcycle Live and your, whatever it was, 9 days on the bounce at the bike show, which is really, that's quite impressive, mate, because one day does it for me.
It's, and yeah.
It takes some doing. Never mind these no-mark celebrities in the jungle eating kangaroo bollocks and things like that. That's nothing to spending 9 days at the show. You have my respect, sir.
No, yeah, it's
and,
it's,
you, and you're more of a celebrity than they are, anyway.
Oh, hardly. No, it's first of all, a big shout out and a big thank you to every Motopod fan who did come up to the BMW stand and say hello. Apologies that I couldn't really chat a bit more, but as many of you saw, I was sort of running a bit of a kindergarten stand with the old VR, attracting a lot of sub 10-year-olds, which is maybe a phrase I need to be careful with how I say. But anyway, no, a big thank you to everyone who did come up at the bike show. You know, speaking to every Motopod fan there was definitely a highlight, and hopefully for the London bike show, it looks like, unless some things change, it looks like that I will be at the London bike show as well, so hopefully we can get a bit more of a fun meetup going on down there.
If I can get the time off work, I shall jump on the train and I shall join you down there as per 2 years ago.
Yeah, I think it was 2 years ago.
Something like that. Yeah, I'll come down for that if I can get the time off work, mate.
Excellent. Well, yeah, Motorcycle Life. It's really interesting. Motorcycle Life, like nothing I've ever done before. As you said, I was there for 7 days straight. And it's so weird because you're just in this incredibly small bubble. And, you know, coming back to air quotes real life was really, really bizarre. And actually took a lot of adjusting to, because you're just so used to, okay, wake up, hotel breakfast, you know, walk 5 minutes from the hotel to the NEC, do the same thing at the NEC for, you know, whatever it is, 6 hours in the day, then go back, and you're always with the same people. So it was a bit of a shock to the system coming back to normality. So yeah, that's my sort of tale from Motorcycle Live.
It is an unusual life at the show. I know a lot of people who go down there and they spend the whole time at the show, and they all say a similar sort of thing. It's every day's Groundhog Day.
Yeah, it really
is. Just with slightly different faces, but the routine is exactly the same, but just for different people.
Yeah, it is.
But it's worthwhile, and it, like you say, it gives you a chance to meet the general public. It was promoting the BMW stand as you were, as part of your remit in life these days. And it's just something a little bit different. But now we're back to reality. We're back to Motopod. And there's a coming out of the show, as we'll get to shortly after we do the subscribers and bits and pieces, there's a raft of British Superbike news that came out of the show in the short amount of time that the show was on. But first of all, before we do head off into the news, we have continued support from these fine people at Motopod. We have Nemaya Bean, Darren Marshall, John Allen, James Dewitt, Craig Lowe, Carl Marsh, William Meyer, Keelan O'Carroll, Andrew Corse, Gary Shavitt, Joe Muller, and Andy Pilbeam. Guys, thank you so much indeed for your continued support of Motopod. A lot of names there that keep popping up on a regular basis, so we're absolutely stoked that you can keep contributing to the show to help us keep us trucking along. Any of the listeners that haven't yet managed to get around to it, I know we're literally 3 weeks away from Christmas, but maybe something to think about in the new year, let's say, with maybe December, maybe January onwards. If you go to www.motopodcast.com, left-hand side, about halfway down, you can either donate or subscribe to the show, as little or as much as you want. Every little bit just helps keep us with running costs. We say this every show, and you know, we don't want to sound like we're repeating ourselves every time, but it really does keep us on track and on course into 2017.
Yep, hugely. And sort of the one advantage of skipping a couple of weeks of shows is that, you know, it sort of does put into perspective just how many of you there are that help support us. So, you know, we really can't say thank you enough. And, you know, hopefully you get your money's worth for supporting the show. You know, we certainly, as we've always said, love doing it. So a thank you for, you know, helping us to keep on talking shit, let's be honest, most of the time, and hopefully making a few people laugh along the way. Of course, if you would like to share your own laughs or anything like that, motopod@motopodcast.com is the email address. And I believe just mere minutes before this show started, we had a hot pile of listener feedback land on our doorstep. So, Dave, if you want to take
us
through
really
that
did. One. Yeah, we really did take us through that one. I was just about to say, the pick of which was one that that's just literally arrived before we started the recording. Stuart Jackson. Stuart, thank you so much for getting in touch. Great to hear from you. His email reads, "Evening all, great show. I listen to as many as I can, even started from as far back as possible. The reason I'm emailing is now the season is well and truly done and dusted, and winter is inbound faster than Sam Lowe's loves hitting the gravel trap."
Oh, poor Lowe's.
Can you say that? He's getting such amount of stick. It's a good analogy, though. I'll take that. He got thinking about some of the fun he's had on the bike over the years. So basically, what Stu's wondering is, what are the listeners and our highlights of riding and racing, basically anything to do with bikes in general? It goes on to say for him, it's his trip to the Isle of Man in 2013 for the TT. If it turns out to be his only visit, it'll be something that he'd never forget. On his own for 3 nights and his trusty Z1000. It's a good bike to take over there. And enjoyed every single moment of it. And obviously, he got to ride the course. And only he can only explain it as being offered to play a football match. Soccer for the guys over the pond. After the soccer pitch after the World Cup final, he said, "Don't get me started on the races themselves. They're unbelievable how close I was able to watch the action." His advice is to everyone is to try and go, even if it's just the once, even if it's just for a couple of days. Anyway, enough crap from me. Hope to hear some other listeners' adventures. Merry Christmas to you all, and I'm soon excited for 2017 season. Lorenzo on the Ducati versus Rossi and Vinales and Marquez. Wow, just wow. I think we all echo the sentiments, certainly, yeah, of the last line of that email. But that's something for the coming weeks. As you said just before we went on to that, motopod@motopodcast.com. Guys, ladies, gentlemen, what are your highlights from your racing history, if you like, depending on how far you go back?
That's a tricky one, in all honesty.
They don't have to be highlights. They can be memories as well. I mean, yeah. one of my biggest memories that comes to mind is sat in the stand at Donington Park, September 2000. Willing with all my might, and as much as I've become reasonably friendly with Neil Hodgson, willing with all my might that Chris Walker took the 2000 British Superbike Championship, and then to see him come past in a plume of smoke like a horizontal space shuttle, let's say, that's a memory that will live long, and the miserable feeling I had on the way home. Something like that lives a long time, but it is not always a particularly good highlight, but it's one that sticks out nonetheless.
Yeah, I'm trying to think for me. I mean, I'm trying to think if there was just that moment, you know, where, oh yeah, you know that this is pretty good. Obviously, you know, some of the Sev stuff's been pretty cool. You know, as I said, the last round in Valencia, that was pretty crazy. In all honesty, I think one of my best biking moments would have to be about this time last year, when I went to the Super Prestigio practice in Rufia, just before the full Super Prestigio, and for me that was a pretty special moment. You know, it was sort of very very grassroots. You know, it was away from all the sunglasses and umbrella girls and hair gel, and you know, it was just a lot of people, you know, doing incredible things on motorcycles. You know, obviously dirt track's pretty impressive to watch, so that was pretty special. You know, obviously the Sepang clash, much like the moon landing, you remember where you were when that happened, and obviously my position as a Dorna employee during that fateful time, you know, made that definitely a bit more memorable.
You're right in the thick of it from there, weren't you? In the thick of it, if you can be in such a place. Talk about talking shit.
That was an interesting day in the office, as I'm sure everyone can guess. But other than that, I don't know. I'm going to have a bit of a think on that, because I'm sure that there was, you know, was some moment where I sort of just realized, wow, you know, some corner I was standing at. Oh, actually, I might have one. So it was, what year was it? It must have been 2012. I was at Mugello. I was walking around the service road, you know, trying to take my my dicky little photos. And so I'd done basically a full lap of Mugello. And then just at the end straight, one of the marshals said sort of, you know, come stand here. And it was right, sort of right next to the straight. And standing there as the bikes went past, that was pretty cool. Definitely had a bit of a chub after that one. Hope mum isn't listening to this episode.
I'm sure she'd be proud that you had you were nursing a chubby as. But then again, which what discerning motorcycle racing fan wouldn't have in that position? Let's be fair.
Yeah, I mean it was pretty cool. And then you know, obviously 2012 was when Stoner was still racing, right? Or was that 2011? Am I getting my years mixed up? I can't even remember. I'm incredibly.
He retired at the end of 2012, didn't he?
Yeah. So it would have been, you know, Stoner was there as well, which obviously is always always pretty special as well. So yeah, that's probably one of mine. As I said, I'll keep having a think. And fans out there, Motopod at motopodcast.com, please do share yours.
Okay, well, that gives you guys something to think about in between shows, at least. So what we'll do now, we'll move on to the news that has come up in the last couple of weeks. Fresh from the NEC, there's a raft of British Superbike announcements that have come through. It seems that while MotoGP and World Superbike, the rider merry-go-round was settled through the middle of the season, and obviously prior to that as well in MotoGP's case with Lorenzo and Vinales. The BSB seems to have used the NEC as the launch pad for 2017. Sometimes it tends to be kicked out all at the MCN show, as we spoke about earlier down at the XL Arena in London. But the some major signings for BSB for 2017.
Yeah, lots of news. So we may get the order of all of these a bit skew-iff, because there were a fair few of them, as we said. But one of the first ones, I believe, was Davide Giuliano signing for Tyco.
Look further down the notes, because I couldn't
BMW.
Remember.
I only know because I had to make sure that nobody saw Davide going from the NEC from the hotel to the NEC, which was entertaining. But yeah, so Davide Giuliano, he's coming to BSB with Tyco BMW. That's a rumor that we'd heard for a long time, and it turned out to be true. You know, Davide Giuliano, on his day, incredibly exciting rider. It's just, unfortunately, last year he was a bit flat. You know, some people had taken out that excitement from him, which caused him to be, you know, fighting for victories but crashing a lot. So interesting to see what he can do in BSB. He's obviously on the BMW, which is... you know, has proven to be a difficult bike for some people to get to grips with. But yeah, interesting to see what Giuliano can do, and he'll be alongside Christian Iden. Iden's definitely one who I think could step up and could be a bit of a surprise. Certainly a favourite to go into the showdown. Maybe not a title favourite, but top six.
Yeah, I mean, he won... Did he win three out of four races in the first two rounds, Christian Iden?
I think
I'm sure he led the championship after the first two rounds. Yeah. He was outstanding. But then just seemed to fall off, just metaphorically fall off a cliff. We spoke about this on the show previously, I know. But when you look at the BMW, it's a fickle thing to say. It's an amazing machine. It's a fantastic piece of kit, but it has such a small setup window.
Yeah, it does. That's what everybody says.
That finding that setup window, including the fly-by-wire throttle and the mapping. Things like that. It's not just the chassis setting, but the electronics take quite a lot of setting up as well. But once you find that sweet spot on it, what a piece of kit! I mean, it's a proven race winner in the hands of Iden and Michael Laverty. So, you know, I think Giuliano, once he finds his feet, I'm not quite sure what he's going to make of Alton Park and Cadwell Park when he gets there. Probably have a similar reaction to Noriyuki Haga, but he still went on and did the business certainly at Alton Park. So. Yes, that's going to be a good one. I'm pleased for the Tyco BMW team. That's a really good signing for them, and a massive name from World Superbikes to come to BSB. Kudos to the series for bringing him across. And another returnee, a returnee from World Superbikes to British Superbikes. Former world champion Sylvain Gintoli has signed for Hawk Suzuki.
Yep, another massive one for the BSB Championship.
Absolutely.
You know, They've had a reputation for headhunting big names in the past, but this is another huge one, and someone who's pretty familiar with all of the tracks.
Yeah, he was here in 2009, but unfortunately it was a season cut short with injury after being taken out at Donington by Josh Brooks on the HM Plant Honda. There's a few sub-stories and bits and pieces of that. Another one that's smoke and mirrors where the true story never actually came out. But unfortunately, I think it was an open fracture of his left leg or his right leg. I can't remember.
Right leg, I think.
It went up the inside. I can picture it now. I think it was the right leg. Basically, Josh Brooks, in air quotes, ran out of brakes. His brakes failed and took out Sylvain Gintoli into the Melbourne loop, which affected him for the rest of the season. So he has unfinished business on the Hawk Suzuki, which will probably, as far as I'm led to believe, will run in the Bennett's colours. So it's basically the whole hog moving from Halsall Racing to Hawk Suzuki for next season. Returnees continue. John Hopkins has re-signed for Steve Moore's Moto Rapido squad, who he rode for a couple of seasons ago. But unfortunately, the squad almost immediately lost their title sponsor, Lloyd's British.
Yeah, that was a bit of a weird 1-2 combo where...
Wasn't it? It was almost immediate as well.
Yeah, Sign, you know, still one of the highest profile racers in that series. Sure, Hopper maybe hasn't had the results in recent years, but he's still a huge name. And then, yeah, within 5 hours, I think it was, oh, by the way, our main sponsor's gone, so maybe this won't happen?
Yeah, well, they've got enough. Running Hopper won't be a problem. It's usually a single rider team anyway, with Danny Buchan previously and obviously John Hopkins the season before. Remember, Hopper put that bike, or the previous incarnation of that bike, on the podium a couple of seasons ago. So he likes the Ducati. He likes how it works. He and the team get on really well. And Steve Moore's come out in the press and said it was a mistake to let him go at the end of 2015. So a nice return for those. But unfortunately, I mean, it's looking like it's just under £50,000 in unpaid invoices for the 2016 season that Lloyd's British have gone bust owing. So, and there's not a chance of them getting that back, I would suggest.
No,
really.
That's,
So that's a huge hole in the budget for Steve Moore, who runs, you know, for how Steve Moore runs that team, for the factory Ducati squad, they get a little bit of help from Bologna, but a lot of it is Steve's work tirelessly to get that team doing what it's doing. And props to him. You know, he's a great guy, and I'd love to see that team do well this season. And putting Hopper on it is a step forward for that. They came in the press the press release that came out about the unpaid invoices and about Lloyd's British going under was that there was a potential of a second rider coming to the team. Now, whether that was on a second superbike or whether that was possibly in stock 1000, we're not 100% sure. I've heard a couple of rumors that they were looking to put a bike out in stock 1000, but that remains to be seen. We're not going to know that for now. There's one or two names bandied about. But it's not really likely that's going to happen right now, unless Steve can pull in some more sponsors. We'll bring you more news on that when we have it.
Yeah, exactly. The sponsorship thing is always, you know, a bit of a behind the scenes dance, and you know, we don't always, or we rarely ever get the full story for sure.
Absolutely true. Let's have a look. Where are we? The Smertz brothers.
Yes, bit of a, I guess not a surprising one, but the Smertz brothers have, you've written PR Kawasaki, but I think it's PR BMW.
Oh, yeah,
right?
I should have put PR Racing, yeah. All right.
I'm just trying to earn a living here, man. I'm just working as an account
seriously.
Executive, you know.
Brilliant. Put it out to all the listeners. Not only do I talk shit, but I write shit as well. That's fantastic.
Yeah, exactly. Don't trust anything that Dave Neal writes.
It used to be
completely biased.
And completely biased on the Kawasaki.
says the man who gets a paycheck partially from BMW.
Exactly. So, okay, right. Read it again. See what it says.
The Smertz brothers have signed for PR Racing in 2017. That's a very well-constructed sentence. Jakob Smertz will contest BSB, while his slightly more crash-prone brother, Matej, will contest the Stock 1000 Championship. They'll both be on BMWs. That Stock 1000 Championship, a lot of really exciting names moving there. So, you know, that'll be another good one to watch. Obviously, we had some great battles this year between Hutchie, Elliott, and McKenzie. So that doesn't look set to change at all for the coming year. So that should be a plus plus.
Not set to change. I think that's going to be the series to watch.
Mm, could very really well be.
There's changes afoot for Stock 1000 that are soon to be announced, and it's going to become much.
I've heard all these whispers about that. You know, everybody's saying, "Oh, Stock 1000."
It's gonna, from what I can gather, it's gonna be a little more high profile than it used to be. I think with Supersport on the demise, they're looking at pushing Stock 1000 further as the feeder class to BSB. And try and maybe they might bring the rules a little bit closer together, so it's not quite a jump. But certainly, a lot of the younger riders are now looking at Stock 1000 instead of Supersport potentially becoming the R6 Cup or the more modern incarnation of Rob Mack's R6 Cup, because that's the only brand new 600 available. You have people like Danny Buchan that's coming in, James Rispoli, Josh Elliott will still be there, Matej Schmerz, Hutchie could potentially return, Keith Farmer's a former champion, Michael Rutter's still there, and as he proved this year, he's no mug. But they could potentially also be joined by former Stock 600 man Mason Law, Stock 600 and Super Sport man Joe Francis. Andy Reid is also looking at Stock 1000, as is last year's Stock 600 champion Jordan Weaving. So if all these young guys are looking more towards Stock 1000, the organisers are looking at giving that a bit more of a flagship for the support championships. There's all sorts of, there's nothing confirmed, nothing's come out yet, but it could be, you know, maybe potentially a couple of races over the odd weekend across the season, a couple of double headers. I'd like to see another session, because as a national series they only get one free practice and two qualifying sessions, so maybe another free practice and two qualifying sessions that it could see it elevated to British status.
That would certainly be good. You know, we definitely do need more people riding the thousands.
Yeah, definitely.
The jump from you know, going from 600 Super Sport to BSB, that can be a big jump. So always good to have a number of alternatives.
It can. Looking at Super Sport, as we mentioned, Andrew Irwin and Ben Curry have been announced today. The young Aussie, who's a former Stock 600 contender and Super Sport from last year with Craig Fitzpatrick's Pace Days Yamaha. They've both teamed up at Gearlink Kawasaki for 2017. And also on the roads, William Dunlop and the departed from BSB Halsall Racing, they've joined forces for the International Roads campaign, which will be the Northwest 200, the TT and the Ulster GP. But as yet on that front, the manufacturer has not yet been announced.
Yep, very comprehensive there. And then in World Supersport news, PJ Jacobsen has signed for the Factory Envy Augusta team. He tested with them in Jerez and seemed pretty happy with the bike. It'll be his fourth team and third manufacturer in World Supersport alone. Obviously, you know, before this he did British Superbikes and British Superstock. So he's definitely getting good at adjusting to bikes quickly.
Yes, he brings a lot of experience with him for a young guy. What is he, 24?
Yeah, 24,
something like that. 23, 24. Yeah, so he's got an awful lot of experience in him there, and he needs to put a consistent season together, and really challenge for a title, because he's shown quite a lot of potential across the years, but never actually brought home the bacon in that sense. So it'd be nice for him to put a concerted effort together, and go for the title. And on the MV, well, why not?
Yeah,
he's only got to beat Sofoglu.
Yep, exactly. The MV has shown the pace. You know, it's been a bit rough at times, but no, it definitely has the speed. And then in surgery news, well, I mean, basically everybody has undergone surgery. Chaz Davies, he underwent surgery.
He has,
to pull out plates and fix some arm pump. Jonathan Bastianini. Ray. Yep, Bastianini. Jonathan Ray, he had some arm pump surgery. Jack Miller had some plates removed. Marco Melandri had to have knee surgery after screwing up his knee playing football. Tito Rabat had some kind of surgery on his right arm. Am I missing anyone, or is that
no, I think that's pretty comprehensive. I like that. December is surgery month.
Yep, it is. So yeah, be sure to check everybody's Instagram and Twitters for all their surgery updates. You know, Dr. Mir, obviously the big MotoGP surgeon, he's earned himself a new Porsche Cayenne with all the surgery he's doing in the off season. So excellent for him.
At the Barcelona hospitals for surgeons, all leave is cancelled in December. Speaking of Instagram, that reminds me, you might have seen this, but because off the top of my head, I've been doing these notes, and for the life of me, I can't remember whose it was. Who's had an arm operation recently, and they put a picture of their scar up on, it was on their left arm, I think.
It was Brad Binder.
Brad Binder, wasn't it?
I also don't think we spoke about that. Binder broke his left arm in testing when he crashed, and then his bike sort of crushed his left arm.
He did, yeah.
So he had to have surgery on that left arm. And yeah, as you say, that's a pretty
it's an
meaty,
awful job.
Pretty meaty.
If you want to see stitches like that, have a look at Brad Binder's Instagram account. It really doesn't look a very neat. It's like two sides of ham stitched together. It really doesn't look like the neatest of jobs.
Surgery was a pretty big story, but much like that listener email we got, we had a steaming hot pile of news dropped on us just before this show. We were going to go talk about World Superbike and MotoGP testing, but then the FIM decided to release some new regulations for World Superbike.
Oh, did they?
So there's some pretty usual stuff, you know, some stuff that for us fans doesn't really matter. Riders aren't allowed to use track scooters for familiarization. You know, some other small rule tweaks.
There's a tweak in World Supersport, isn't there?
They're doing
flag to flag tire changes. We welcome was the wording on the official release. We welcome the flag to flag and wheel change. Yeah, I'm sure that's going to be welcomed by the teams.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of angsty teenagers on 600s are really excited for that one.
Oh, I bet there are some mechanics that are on blood pressure tablets are really going to be chuffed to bits with that.
Some of that stuff's overall, you know, and the race schedule will be changed, obviously fit in the 300 class now. The Stock 1000 Cup now becomes the European Championship because it's going away in the SEV. Yada, yada, yada. Pretty boring, some small technical regulations, whatever, who cares.
But then the piece de resistance.
So now, the idea of a backwards grid has been floated around before. It's a very exciting idea. You know, we love Valentino Rossi in Valencia, Marc Marquez in Moto2 in Valencia, in Phillip Island, in Motegi. All great races to see someone charge through the back of the grid. Just, you know,
Brad Binder, Jerez, perfect.
Exactly. You know, real great feats of riding. So the World Superbike Championship thought, you know what? That's a pretty good idea. You know, we've had a bit of a tough year, so why don't we flip this grid? But they haven't just flipped the grid.
No.
They've flipped the grid and then required that you have an advanced degree in mathematics to figure out what the grid for race 2 is going to be.
They haven't flipped it so much as actually shuffled it like a pack of 9 cards.
Yeah, that's actually a really good way to look at it. So it only affects the top 9. And so what happens is that the first row slides to the third row. The top three slide to the third row.
So they start 7th, 8th, and 9th.
Yeah, and that's based just on their race position. It doesn't matter if, you know, about their qualifying position. And so then whoever finished 4th, 5th, and 6th in the race, 4th now becomes pole position, et cetera, et cetera. And then 7th, 8th, and 9th, they slide up to the second row. So fair enough. That's pretty simple. So now once we've slid the top three down to the third row, we then switch third and first so that first now starts in 9th place. So hopefully everybody understood that, because that's about as simple as I think we can make it.
So as it reads...
Yeah, here, how about you just read out the official statement? That's probably a better idea.
I've got it in front of me waiting. It's okay. The front three rows will be affected in the following way. Now, I've read this 5 or 6 times, and it's still making my head hurt. The top three riders move back to row 3 and see first and third reverse their positions.
Yes.
Okay.
Understood.
So first and third will then become 7th and 9th?
Yep, 7th for third and 9th for
first. Riders who finished in 4th, 5th, and 6th will be promoted to the front row.
That's easy enough to understand, I think.
Yep, that's 3 moving 1 step forward. Not a problem. Riders who finished in 7th, 8th, and 9th will start from the second row. So again, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th, they're easy. You boys, 1 pace step forward. Easy. Front row, 2 paces back. First and third, swap sides.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
what's the fucking point in that?
It is going to make the racing more exciting. You know, you can't you can't argue that seeing, you know, Jonathan Rea or Chaz Davies charge forward from ninth on the grid is going to keep the racing closer for more. You know, we're not going to, I don't think we're going to see Chaz Davies, you know, run away as he did in the last couple of races. So
with the greatest of respect, and, you know, as a fan of motorcycle racing, what a crock of horse shit. I don't see, really don't see the point in this at all. I mean, if you're going to reverse the grid, sure. If you want to fuck about with it as best you can, just flip it 1 to 9, just flip the grid.
Yeah. I mean, simple. Flipping the grid would have been a bit simpler, you know, going ninth to first.
Keep it simple. Or just adopt the BSB way of doing it and go fastest lap on pole and just order it by fastest laps. Because there's been stories muted around the press of BSB looking at doing something along those lines to the grid for race two. But really, there's nothing wrong with just the way that they're doing it and making it just on the fastest lap. If you've got a championship challenger who's had a crap qualifying and in race one has a crap qualifying position for race one, puts in a decent lap and ends up on the front row on race two, in World Superbike terms, he's then going to start back where he was previously. There's no advantage. Do you know what I mean? So if he wins it, I'm getting myself muddled up with this, but I know what I'm trying to say. It's just stop fucking about with it. And if you are going to fuck about with it, just keep it simple. Either flip the grid or do it on the BSB times. There's never been an issue with the BSB fastest times, fastest lap times from race one to decide the grid for race two. And it gives guys who've had a crap qualifying or a crap time in qualifying chance to make amends for race two. Even if they have a crap race one and they only go out and put in a decent lap for a better start position for race two, that's better. It's a more level playing field. But brilliant. You've won the race. Congratulations. Now start in ninth place and do it. What? No, don't want to. I don't want to start in seventh either. If I've won the race, I'm going to have potentially one of the fastest laps as well. So you will still start towards the front of the grid. But I don't like that. That's just a little bit too. They've messed about with it too much. They've overthought it. Somebody's had far too much time on their hands to think about that. And instead of just flipping the grid, they say, I know what, let's flip the grid. Yeah, but I know what, let's swap seventh and ninth as well while we're at it, just to really piss the commentary team off. Yeah. You know, I don't know. No, I don't agree. It's messing for messing's sake. So who put Donald Trump in charge of writing the rules for World Superbikes?
Oh, that's a bit mean. They're trying their best.
They are trying, but they're now from trying their best to trying too hard is it's not a very big step, but they seem to have made it quite a big step by doing this. It's great that they're looking at it. It's great that they're looking to put things forward. And I'm pleased that they're addressing the fact that there are potential issues in World Superbikes. They've picked up on official BSB rules before and taken them into account and used them to their benefit in World Superbikes. So why not do it with this? I don't know if who's in charge of the rules and regulations? Greg Levere. You pretty much Greg Levere Scott Smart.
Yeah, Greg Levere and Scott Smart. They're sort of the two head guys. Obviously, Javier Alonso was involved with it, but then he got fired. So,
he's not there anymore, unfortunately.
No.
So, did they think this up at the Christmas party? Maybe, because it looks like they pulled this out of a cracker. So, no. I appreciate that from a fan's point of view and no reflection of any organisation whatsoever. Just keep it simple. Just either go for a reverse grid or adopt the BSB fastest lap times. I'll get down off my high horse now.
No worries at all. You know, Motopod at motopodcast.com. I'm sure we're going to have some excellent fan responses to this. You know, as we said, this came out, you know, maybe 30 minutes before we started doing the show, and Twitter has already produced some absolutely wonderful little gems of responses. So Motopod at motopodcast.com. Would love to hear what all of you think. I'm still very on the fence about this. It's going to make the racing more exciting for sure, But I can definitely understand how some people would be upset with it fiddling too much with racing, you know, trying to turn racing too much into a production and less of a sport. I can definitely see that.
But also the fastest four or five guys, I can't see them being too happy about dicing with guys that they don't see every weekend.
Yeah, that's the other thing. And that's actually why I think it's sort of good that they've limited it to the top nine, because no offense to guys that, you know, are riding for Team Toth and stuff like that. But if you put them at the front of the grid and they're having to have whatever it is, 22 riders come past them at the first corner, that just becomes dangerous for everybody. You know, it's no longer exciting. It's just, okay, this is now actually dangerous. So I actually think that only doing it to, you know, more or less half the grid with the top nine is actually a smart move.
It's just
sort of, as you said, card shuffling is a bit odd at its face. But, you know, we haven't seen it in action yet, so I guess
I'm sure it would settle eventually. A bit like MotoGP when they split qualifying into two sessions and the top two go through. That was a bit of a head squeeze at the time, but that became part and parcel of the format now, and we know how it works. But this just seems a bit messing for kind of messing's sake a little bit. But my initial reaction was, what the fuck? Really? Nah, that no, just simplicity. You know. That's enough said.
Yep, keep it simple, stupid. The KISS principle.
I didn't say stupid. You did. Well, I avoided that.
That's what my what was it? My seventh grade IT teacher said when we had a design project was follow the KISS principle, and everything will be okay.
Exactly. But I just didn't want to call the people that were putting the rules together stupid. I might berate them verbally, but
I can guarantee they've been called much, much worse by much angrier people than yourself.
In the usual sense of the phrase, they've been called worse by better.
Yes, exactly. So now we come to the sort of the part of the show that we thought we would take up the bulk of the time. You know, when we first set out to do the show, we thought it'd be quite a neat little show. It'll probably still be a bit of a shorty, but we obviously had a MotoGP and World Superbike test at Jerez.
Yeah,
and you know they were testing for multiple days, but the fourth day is the day that we're going to pay a bit of attention to. Obviously, you know, if you follow motorcycle news, then you'll probably know all about this to the ends of the world and back. But Jonathan Rea on his Kawasaki Superbike actually topped that test ahead of Alvaro Bautista, Chaz Davies second, Loris Baz fourth, Tom Sykes fifth. So out of the top five, three of those bikes were superbikes. Sure, it's not the creme de la creme of MotoGP. You know, no factory teams apart from was Lowe's there?
Sam was there and KTM.
Yep. So yeah. So apart from, you know, the two new factories, none of the proper factories were there. So, you know, it's a bit hard to draw conclusions like that. But yeah. No.
And also at Jerez as well. That's not really. That's like trying to compare Superstock and Superbike times around Knockhill or Mallory.
Yeah, exactly. Jerez isn't a circuit like Mugello where the bikes can stretch their legs. You know, Jerez's a lot more about corner speed and things like that. But you know, David Emmett and a couple of other people, will link to the David Emmett piece just because we always link to Moto Matters, so why not? David Emmett did some comparing to Valentino Rossi and Jonathan Rea's times. And it's actually quite interesting when you look at it because, you know, the first half of the race, Rossi is clearly a lot faster. But in the second half of the race, you know, when the tyres start to drop off, Jonathan Rea, in terms of his race simulation that he did versus Rossi's race pace from MotoGP, he started to close down that gap. You know, at the end of the air quotes race, Jonathan was still about 2 seconds behind Rossi. But, you know, that's still pretty impressive, if you ask me.
I think it is. Yeah, it is. And there's all sorts of conjecture. And we know that it all has to be... There's always who's what's whys and wherefores, and do you mind if I don't? The MotoGP race is in May where it's warmer. They're on Michelins. These guys are on Pirellis. There was talk of what tyre Jonathan was using. And as you say, he's not up against the elite of MotoGP and the factories of MotoGP. Take nothing away from the lap that he did, with his best being a 1:38.721, which apparently was on a used qualifier.
Yeah,
if I remember right.
Yeah. You know, super hard to verify things like that.
It is, yeah. This is why things should be taken sometimes with a pinch of salt. It's hard to determine exactly what was going on, but the guys at crash.net, the guys were on the scene, they were there, and The lap 138.721 was a stunning lap from Jonathan Raitt, and it really did make an awful lot of people sit up and take notice. A lot of his peers came out onto Twitter and social media lauding the lap time. The comparison is always difficult. If we look at the bare bones of the lap, it was simply stunning. To be quarter of a second ahead of a MotoGP bike is something pretty incredible. 0.4 ahead of Chaz Davis, 0.5 ahead of Loris Baz, and 0.75 ahead of his teammate. You know, that's a pretty scintillating lap for anybody. So, yeah, you know, kudos to Jonathan Raitt, who on the Monday evening was lauded back in his home country of Northern Ireland for his World Superbike victory.
Yeah, and to put that lap into perspective, that 138.7 that he did, that would have actually put him on pole position for the MotoGP race earlier in the year by a 100th of a second. Obviously, you know, different time of the year. Jerez is a track that, you know, at the start of the year when MotoGP go there, it's a lot more slippery due to the heat. So, you know, sort of this time is a bit more ideal for lap times. But I think it sort of just confirms what we know about guys like Jonathan Raitt, Chaz Davies and Tom Sykes, is that they're all very, very good motorcycle riders, and, you know,
absolutely
had the right machinery come up at the right time in MotoGP, then, you know, there's not really much doubt in my mind that those three guys could be up there, you know, mixing it with Cal Crutchlow and those guys.
I couldn't agree more. But if those three moved on, just think how much it would cripple World Superbike as a series if you took those three guys out of it. Yeah. You know, they are the guys that the main three that are on the podium week in and week out. But yeah, I mean, for Jonathan Raitt to put in that time that would have put him on pole back in May. Again, I'm going to play devil's advocate. The Michelins were only three races old.
Yes, at that point.
At that point. And Pirellis are how many seasons old now? Are we on to five seasons of World Superbike racing?
Yeah, something like that, if not more. So
yeah, I'm not only playing devil's advocate. I'm not punching holes in anybody's argument. I'm just there's always whys and wherefores. But yeah, the fact that he could do that on a, air quotes, production motorcycle, albeit a factory produced one, ahead of the MotoGP guys in their times from May, is just shows the sheer quality of the man. And I would have loved to have seen him get a better crack at MotoGP. But again, it goes on to conjecture and everything else. The fact that he didn't have the opportunities to, or he did have the opportunities to do it, but it depends on the level of ride you want, doesn't it? You can either go to MotoGP for MotoGP's sake to say that you are a MotoGP rider, or you can go to World Superbikes, dominate, and become world champion.
Become double world champion, in fact.
Indeed. So there's reasons and whys and wherefores for both sides of the coin. But yeah, fantastic. And roll on testing in Sepang, which starts on the 31st of January, 1st of February, something along those lines.
Yep, something like that. Not too long at all. It's actually very, very close. So
it's not too long if we do bi-weekly podcasts.
No, it's very, very close. This off-season is a lot shorter than I had sort of hoped it would be. I was quite looking forward to having a bit of a break from everything, but no. So just a couple more highlights to throw out there. As Dave said, we will now be doing bi-weekly shows unless there's some huge drama like some new World Superbike rules. So in the show notes, there'll be a link to a nice little interview with Arthur Cicis, done by someone who goes under the alias of Kent Brockman, obviously the news reporter from The Simpsons. That went up on Moto Matters, and that's a really good chat with Arthur Cicis, obviously former Moto3 podium finisher, who, as he admits himself in this interview, not to spoil it, but, you know, he sort of lost his way and, you know, got a bit emotional with the paddock, and so went speedway racing, and sort of just, you know, what he's doing with his life now and reflecting back on that. So that's a pretty good, pretty quick read by Moto Matters standards. It's not too long. And then on the opposite end of the scale, obviously not as long and in-depth as your chat with him, Dave, but a wonderful chat with Matt Oxley and Freddie Spencer about Freddie Spencer's racing career, which was done for the Autosport podcast. So that's all not only a audio thing, but also a visual thing. So don't get any ideas about us doing a video podcast, because that's going to be fun for no one.
At GP Bry keeps prodding us for that, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
He's going to have video podcasts happen. And things like that. We have faces for radio, and faces for radio only.
Yes, unfortunately, that is the case. But yeah, certainly, you know, I think the Freddie Spencer thing is like 70 minutes long or something.
Yeah, it's so, about that, yeah, 75 minutes. But again, the attention to detail that Freddie goes into from those times, from those days back then, it's always a riveting listen whenever Freddie Spencer speaks. Obviously, Phil Hall spoke to him last year at the PI Classic.
Yep, and speaking of Phil Hall at PI Classic, he'll be back down there this year. I just sent off his accreditation form. So
fantastic!
Look
I look forward
excellent
to
interviews.
Brilliant
as ever from our man on the ground.
Certainly, of which the ground that you will be walking in a couple of weeks' time as you head back down under.
Yes, exactly. I am off to Australia next Monday. I had thought my flight was leaving on the 16th, but then I double checked the ticket and realised, oh, it's the 12th. So remember, kids.
Oh, only 4 days earlier.
Yeah, only four days earlier. So remember, Brilliant. Kids, always check your flights before you go, or else you'll end up like me and realize, oh God. But
please, for Sev, you only have to fly to Barcelona.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Sev's easy because it's sort of like, was there a MotoGP race the week before? Is there a week between MotoGP rounds? And yes, there's Sev on. So
the track's rubbered in. We'll go there.
Exact amundo. So yeah, I think that's pretty much the show, unless you have any little gems of wisdom to throw out at us.
I think in 3 years of doing the show, I don't think I've offered a gem yet, so I don't think today is going to be any different. No, I'm all good. It's been a busy week with BSB and everything else, so hopefully now the two weekly thing I think is a good idea. It gives the listeners a chance to catch up on bits and pieces and obviously go into preparations for Christmas and the such like without us droning on in their ear hole, especially when there isn't an awful lot to drone on about. So it's better to put a podcast together for you guys where we have something to say rather than just trying to fill a 45-minute time frame, something like that. Going back to Stu's email, by all means, send in your highlights. We can put those together for the next couple of three shows across the festive period and the such like. That'd be interesting to know what you guys have witnessed, what sticks in memories for you. It depends how far you go back as well, and depending on which side of the planet you are, whereabouts in the world you are located. It'll be a nice little cross section, I think, of memories. So yeah, by all means, guys, motopod@motopodcast.com. We'll collate those over the coming weeks. Please send them in. We'd love to read your emails as we always do. Anything you'd like to hear from us as best we can with the times that we have, features that we could maybe put together, things you'd like to hear from us or our opinion on things. Everybody's got an opinion, some of them right, some of them wrong, some of them different. Some my small rant about World Superbikes. That's me not getting a job in World Superbikes anytime soon. Although there was a guy who works in World Superbikes in response to the rules coming out in response to MCN's tweet about it, just posted a picture of Mickey Mouse.
Oh yeah, I did see that one. That was pretty funny. It took me a second to get it, but when I got it, it really hit.
No words, just a picture of Mickey Mouse. It's that's how you do it. That it's subtlety, not something that's ever been in my vocabulary too well. But no, certainly nothing from me to add. Harry, as always, it's an absolute pleasure to be on with you. Potentially Martin Darlington in the next couple of weeks.
Yes.
He's sort of champing at the bit to come back on, but as we had a little bit of BSB news to catch up on, I stepped in for this week. So potentially it could be Skyler as well, because he's working on a few bits and pieces from across the pond. So
yes,
it could well be a couple of weeks' time, Martin and Skyler joining forces. I think with the time difference, it's easier for those guys to hook up than it is for us here in the UK with Skyler, with him being on the West Coast.
Yeah, it can be. Also, not only do you have the time differences, but it seems like both those guys work weird hours as well. So like that sort of complicates it a bit further.
Yeah, it does. We're quite fortunate that there are times when my work shifts allow me to be home on and swimming duties with Emily. So, Monday nights are always free. So anytime we need to record on a Monday night is not a problem. But this one being a Wednesday, we've done pretty good.
Yeah, very good for a Wednesday. And
I thought I did well there.
Yeah, no, that was very good. And on that note, I think we're going to say goodbye to everybody. And as we said, come back again in 2 weeks for the next installment.
ha ha, turns out that this is a lie, because then British Stock 1000 released some ridiculous rules, so we'll be back next week. Excuse the bad audio quality here. I'm literally just recording this off my laptop microphone as I edit the show.
Once again, a huge thank you to everybody who does listen to the podcast, and a big thank you as well to everybody who does donate and send in that listener feedback, because, you know, seeing those sort of signs of appreciation and that you guys out there are listening really does help. You know, we can't thank you enough for enabling this this pretty crazy ride that all of us hosts have been on as a result of this this lovely little show.
They must like it, because they keep letting us turn up week after week. So we're doing okay so far. Episode 517. So, you know, it's not too bad. I hope it is 517, you know, because I checked that.
It is. I double checked, because the last folder I have is 516. but no, we're getting closer and closer to having 2 years of shows where you could listen to a show every day for 2 years, which is absolutely terrifying in all honesty.
That's ridiculous. Yeah. Oh man, we'll be on almost half of them.
Three. We joined pre 400.
Yeah, we did. We were sort of 380-ish, weren't we? So yeah. Just under half of the shows that almost half of the shows we've been on, and we're still here.
Yeah, we are still here. We're still alive.
Were you trying to work that out in your head?
I was, but then it was easier to figure out the World Superbike grid than figure out that math.
It really was.
Ooh,
on that
sick,
note.
Sick burn. Yeah, on that sick burn, the World Superbike grid is off to the Burns unit after I completely roasted it there. Some hip-hop lingo for all of you, MotoPod listeners out there. And yeah, I'm
3 years old. I haven't got a clue what you're talking about.
I'm going to stop talking shit. So bye from me, and we'll catch you all next show.
And goodbye from me as well. Take care, all. Bye-bye.